honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special tribute episode to Jimmy Weldon, a World War II veteran who spent the entirety of his post-war life entertaining, educating, and inspiring. Jimmy Weldon passed away July 6th, just 2.5 months short of his 100th birthday. Jimmy's request was to be cremated and have his ashes interred in London next to his beloved wife Muriel, who passed away in 1988. A celebration of life is being planned for American Legion Post 43 in Hollywood, where Jimmy was chaplain emeritus. It was in uniform in Europe during World War II with the 1270th Engineer Combat Battalion that Jimmy's ability to engage audiences really started to take off.
Every time I had someone come over that was a celebrity, they would put a program, and I did the MC. I was MC of the program and did something. And when the war was over, Colonel Connors, who was our battalion commander, called me and he said, I want you to go into Chafe headquarters, General Eisenhower. He went over and he said, this fella should have been in the entertainment industry, entertainment department of the Army all of his career. He said, so we're going to move him into here. Mm-hmm. And I went into Chafe headquarters, and that's where I spent the last few weeks in the Army before I went to the Royal Academy. We were sitting there, and one of the guys said, are you going to stay over here and go to school? I said, no, I'm not going to school. I'm an actor. I'm going to Hollywood. He said, well, why don't you stay here and go to school? I said, I don't want to go to school. And he said, well, why don't you just look at what we have? I said, give me the list. Let me have it. I saw all these great universities thing. I got into the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. I said, that's the one I want to go to. They said, you got the only one and you couldn't get in. I said, give me a pass. I went over to London and met Sir Kenneth Barnes, who was the head of the Royal Academy. And I said, Sir Kenneth, I got to come to this school. I told him a story about when I was a little boy and about to cry. And he said, Mama, he killed that guy. I said, I've got to be an actor. He said, by Jove, I'll accept you. And that's why I went to Royal Academy. Can you imagine that?
Backtracking again, when you say that you emceed any time one of these USO shows and a celebrity would come by, who are some of those names?
Mickey Rooney came in, and he and I had the same birthday. He died. He was just 3 years older than I am. But I let him use my gun that Dad sent me overseas because I wanted to have a sidearm. I had a .45, and Mickey Rooney wore it in the play that he did when he came over. We talked about it later when he came out to Hollywood. I never thought I'd see him again. Mm-hmm. But Red Skelton, I emceed his program at Camp Swift when he did a program. He used to go around. Any of the celebrities that came out, they'd say, get Shin. That's my name. I mean, right. Jimmy Weldon's
a Hollywood name.
That's it. It was because of my oldest brother. Uh-huh. And the middle one, that's how I got their name. I took their names.
So who, your oldest brother?
Yeah,
was...
I was overseas. We were in had just gone into France. Mm-hmm. And he got this letter from Mom and Dad, and they said, Bub and Betty had a little boy, and they wanted to name him Jimmy Weldon. And he said, Bub, my oldest brother said, no, we can't use no Fern's names. My oldest brother's name was Joe Weldon Shin, S-H-I-N-N. The middle boy, James Lemoyne Shin. Paul, you're sitting here with Ivy Laverne Shin. I got invitation to every woman's college that was in existence. How they ever did this, I don't know, but my dad's baby brother was named Ivy, and where they got Laverne, I don't know. But Moyne and I went to school without the L.A. We'd call each other Moyne and Vern. Mm-hmm. Everybody did that. So when I read this letter, they said, want to name him Jimmy Weldon. That's Bub's second name and Moyne's first name.
Yeah.
And I said, Jimmy Weldon, I like that name. That's what I'm going to be known as for right now. That was right in France.
You're still in the service. You're still Ivan Laverne Shin.
That's right. And when I go into to Chafe headquarters, I told these guys, I said, I've got a new name I want to use. And these fellas said, you're Jimmy Weldon for us. I was almost engaged to Muriel before she knew I wasn't Jimmy Weldon because they said something about, she said, I'm going to America, and said, what relation is she to you? And she said, that's my husband going to be. Because Ivy Laverne, that's got to be women. I told Mom, I said, where in the thunder you all got those names? But anyway, it's amazing. Muriel was on Little House on the Prairie 8 years. Trapper John 5 years as a nurse. Mm-hmm. Famous. I mean, great dancer.
Yeah, you were a Hollywood couple, to be sure. But how you didn't tell us the story of how you met. You told us you met her and you brought her home as a war bride, but how did you meet Muriel?
All right. I was putting on my show over there at Rainbow Corner.
Uh-huh.
And she was supplying drinks for the soldiers behind the desk. In fact, anyone that was in the entertainment industry over there, part of their work, their actual work was to entertain the soldiers or be at Rainbow Corner serving drinks and dance with them and something.
Mm-hmm.
So she was serving Cokes. She said, "Would you like to dance with me?" And I said, I'm not a good dancer. And she said, "Well, I'm not either." Like that. And so we got on the dance floor and I said, "Man, you can't dance very well, can you?" She said, "No." Later, I go down to see where she is. She said, "Would you see the show I'm in?" She was one of the principal dancers at the Night in the Music, the longest running show in London, Vic Oliver's Night in the Music. He was married to Sarah Churchill, Vic Winston's daughter.
Uh-huh.
And when I saw it, I said, "Good golly, there's Muriel out on that stage as one of the principal dancers." And I said, "She can't dance." But anyway, we had a great life. 40 and a half years. Look, I tell people now. I said, "Muriel was married to her 4.5 years, little English girl, then she left me." They said, "Oh, that's an English girl." I said, "Oh, wait a minute. I don't know where she is." "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah." Now, tell them the story. I was in the hospital with her at St. Joseph's Hospital, crying my heart out. And she said, "Oh, darling, please pray to let Jesus take me now." I said, "What's going to happen to me?" She said, "You have such a wonderful life motivating others about their future. Don't cry. I'll just be there waiting for you." And I watched her pass away right there in front of me. I tell everybody I know where she is. Denver Pyle. Do you remember his name? The actor?
Mm-hmm.
I gave Muriel's memorial service. He said, "You can't do this." I said, "I'm the only one that can." So in our church, when he walked out, I walked over, and Denver and his wife, Tippy, were sitting over to the side, and I said, "Hey, Denver, why are you and Tippy sitting way over here?" And he said, "Weldon, if the show's no good, I'm leaving." That was at Muriel's memorial service. We had a good time. But anyway, that's life goes on. You can't stop.
Had you been doing the duck voice all along?
Yeah, but just as a fun thing, when I went in radio back in Chickasha, 250-watt station, first job, I asked the manager, I said, "Could I do a program with the little duck voice I do?" Couldn't call him Donald Duck. I had to name him something. So anyway, in my book, I tell how I changed the name because I'd use little Webster. Like, I'd take the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here at the mic, and I'd say, "Oh, there's a little fella over at the door. Hey, who are you?"
"I'm a duck."
Well, come over here."
"All right, I'll be right here."
And he'd come over to the microphone, and people would call in and say, "Who's this guy?" Because they thought it was two different people.
Yeah.
And so that's where we developed Little Webster's voice, and he loved Spike Jones and all that. And that's where it kept on going. And finally, when television came along, they said, "You're going to have to get a duck." I said, "What do you mean, ventriloquist?" I said, "I move my mouth more talking like a duck than I do myself." And, "Well, you got to learn." And so that's when I developed the thing of having a little Webster. And I look at Webster. And most ventriloquists look out in the audience like, "How good they can do without moving their mouth." I had to look at him because I moved my mouth more talking to him than I did myself. But people used to tell me, they say, "How do you make his eyes move?" He didn't move anything. It was just the expression that we did for each other. You know?
Yeah, it made it seem like he did.
Yeah.
I've got to ask you, and maybe I'm way off on this, but you know, it seems that a lot of the great ideas and the true inspiration and the creativity that we take for granted so often, that a lot of times when it's first expressed or first originated, it's not quite as popular. Or there's naysayers and there's people that say, "That's a horrible idea. You ought to quit doing that." Did you ever have somebody tell you that was bad?
Did I? The director of my first director, Dawes Butler, everybody said, well, Mr. Campbell was the one. He liked me. He heard me on radio. Mm-hmm. And when I got the duck, he's the one told me, "You got to get a duck." Because we bought a television station. I said, "Okay." So I got this, and then I came back and had Webster with me, and we were doing an audition out there at WFAA TV.
In Dallas.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The director, Ash Dawes, my director, and three other guys, "This is the dumbest thing. He won't last a week on the air." Mr. Campbell said, "Make his show good." And if it hadn't been for Mr. Campbell having faith in me, I would never done anything here. And later on, they said, "Well, that he saw something in you we didn't. Mm-hmm. But then, and I gave my life story to a group of doctors. When he called me one day and he said, Jimmy, he said, this is Dr. Abrams. Would you come down and give your life story to 150 doctors and their wives? I said, what? He told me, see, I was looking at the paper this morning. I saw, and he said, darling, I'm reading this paper article here about a man talking like a duck for a living. There's got to be a reason. I think he'd be interested to have to be one of our programs. So I go down there. I talk, I take a little Webster out, and we do a little fun thing. I got through, and he said, well, I'm not interested in you, but I'll buy any part of that duck. And that's where it all started, you know, on TV. So it was, I've been so fortunate, man, really. God gives us talents, but our creative imagination is far greater than any talent we have. Remember what I just said? Our talent is good, but the creative imagination we have is far greater. Thomas Alva Edison working on a incandescent light, and his assistant came in one day and said, Mr. Edison, I'm not really sure what you're working on, but you failed 967 times so far. And he said, no, I've just eliminated 967 ways that won't work. Mm-hmm. I said, God gave him that electric light in his mind before it ever appeared on a laboratory table. I said, don't stop. That's the key. So important. And so when you have a dream, just think about it. There'll never be another you. No way, shape, or form. Nobody can ever think like you do. Mm-hmm. You're unique in every way. The idea, though, that the key is so important, don't stop. Once you have your dream and you make a goal, don't stop. And that's what happened to me. I'd been on the air with Little Webster for, since 1950. Now I'm in Fresno, right, and I heard a man speak on the word motivation. A desire held in expectation with the belief that it will be realized. Never heard that word before. When he started talking, I said, golly, I was listening to it. He said, there are millions of bodies in our cemeteries whose epitaph should read, died at 20, buried at 90, because they mistook their first goal as success and stopped. So when you reach your goal, you must keep reaching higher and higher. It's not a destination. It's a journey that never ends. Got two things going for us, Paul.
Yeah.
One of which we have no control whatsoever. That's time. One of my pet peeves, someone say, do it this way and save time. You can't save one billionth of a second. Think about the time we've been on the air together now here. Mm-hmm. All these minutes are gone. You can't get them back. Can't save time. Spend your time wisely. The only thing we own lock, stock, and barrel is our attitude. Don't let anyone step on your attitude. I will hear not those who weep and complain, for their disease is contagious. Let them join the sheep. The slaughterhouse of failure is not my destiny. The prizes of life are at the end of each journey, not near the beginning, and it's not given to me to know how many steps are necessary in order to reach my goal. Failure I may still encounter at the thousandth step, yet success hides behind the next bend in the road. Never will I know how close it lies unless I turn the corner. Always will I take another step. If that is of no avail, I will take another and yet another. In truth, one step at a time is not too difficult. I will try and try and try again. Each obstacle I consider is a mere detour to my goal and a challenge to my profession. I will persist and develop my skills as a mariner develops his by learning to ride out the wrath of each storm. So long as there's breath in me, that long will I persist. For now I know one of the greatest principles of success, if I persist long enough, I will win. I will persist. I will win. That's one of the scrolls in the Ogmandino's greatest salesman ever lived. I memorized that and I've given it in churches many times in years, yeah.
And I know you've got a fountain of motivational pieces like that. And I'm interested in your journey, because I'm sure as that 7-year-old kid, you never could have imagined all the twists and turns from going off to war, surviving that, meeting your wife, bringing her home. You both find careers in show business. But you started out, and you kind of went past this quickly. You start out at a brand new radio station that had never had a single announcer before. You're the very first announcer on this brand new radio station right after World War II in Oklahoma. You create this character, and he takes off, so you're on television in Texas, then in Hollywood, then in Fresno, and Salinas, and Bakersfield, and you're flying back and forth in your own plane to all these stations?
Yes.
I mean, who does that?
Well, I don't know. I've been the most fortunate guy God ever let live.
And you had talked about wanting to be a pilot, and your flight training gets cut short because they need bodies in Europe, and you go over as an engineer. Did you learn to fly right after you got back, or
yes.
How did you become a pilot?
Yeah, Moen, my brother, he was still in the Air Force. I mean, yep. we're home. We buy a Super Cub together, and that's when I got my license, 1946. But, Paul, here's the key. You said it when you went by here.
Yeah.
Every time I do anything, if it's a commercial or any part in a film, that little boy comes to life again.
You know, one thing that I believe, that if there's anything that I've learned, is that it's God's plans are always better than my plans. No matter how I line things up, his ideas are always better. And it strikes me that with your acting and voicing career, you've got this character, Webster Webfoot. You aren't pitching him to Hollywood and saying, hey, you need to put me on. They heard about you, and they came to you and said, let's do this new Hanna-Barbera show. So
yes.
What was the first thing you heard about this idea of Yogi Bear, who's now, everybody knows Yogi Bear?
Can't believe it. Yeah, when Bill Hanna called me and told me who he was, said, we're going to start a new program called Yogi Bear, and he said, there's a little duck here named Yaki Doodle. We just want you to do the voice.
Mm-hmm.
I said, fine. But like I say, I had no idea what it would mean.
How
but
did they find you?
They heard me saw me doing Webster.
They saw you on television.
Right, yeah. Yep. So and that's when they called me to come in. It's unbelievable what that little character has meant. Like I said, wherever I go, they always wondered what the guy looked like, did the voice, that little duck. Paul, wherever I go, it makes no difference. And he's still on the air today.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Hanna-Barbera program of Yogi Bear is on Cartoon-a-Rooney and Boomerang. I never dreamed one day that I would be able to touch the lives of young people by doing a voice that I did on television 53 years ago that they register now with me. It means, in other words, that is something tangible. I can see if they got an old guy that's going to come talk to you about the war and what America means. That's nothing. But when they hear that I'm Yaki Doodle and they say, golly, because I always say we're all children when we can get away with it. Only difference between an adult and a child is just the cost of the toy. And I'm always saying this too. Psychic income only appears in an income tax. No, it's in the heart. Recognition for an entertainer is the greatest income there is.
Mm. You know, powerful words.
Yeah, instead of saying, oh, I know that old jerk. But if they say, oh, I remember him. And when someone comes up and says, Uncle Jimmy, when they say Uncle Jimmy, I want to cry. One of the at-risk students one time, a little girl came up. When I say little, she's 15 years old. And she said, Mr. Weldon, I forgot all of my problems when you were talking just now. Thank you for coming to speak to us. And I think, good golly, those kind of things are just knock me out. That's why I say the two greatest things you can ever say to anybody are these, thank you and I love you. Hmm. They're not used enough. I close with prayer at our American Legion in every meeting because I'm the chaplain emeritus. And I'm always talking about, I say, Father, we thank you so much for those heroes that are represented by that MIA flag draped over that empty chair. They're with you right now in post everlasting. We'll all be together someday, but thank you. They gave their all that we can be free right here tonight as we're standing together in our little building, the American Legion. How blessed we are to live in a country, greatest that was ever designed, and yet if we're not careful, we'll lose it. Our freedoms we take for granted, and yet we don't really realize how blessed we are.
How blessed we are, and how blessed we were to have Jimmy Weldon on the planet for the last 99 years and 10 months. It sure brought back some great memories for me to listen to his voice or voices again today, and I trust it did for you as well. You can link to our complete original interview with Jimmy and find videos of this one-of-a-kind entertainer at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. It is hard to listen to his voice, his passion, his creativity, his hopeful outlook, and not feel at least a little bit inspired. Here's hoping Jimmy Weldon's legacy will continue to have that effect for years to come. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.